the essential podcast for educators in the UK, made by teachers for teachers.
Hello and welcome to the Homework Podcast. Today we are looking at teacher retention and whether there really is a crisis. Government statistics, the most recent ones that we have, show that out of the 21,500 teachers who started work in 2010, over 6,500 of them have since left, so that's 30%. So gents, that's obviously quite a staggering statistic. Is it something that we should be worried about? Is there a teacher retention crisis?
I think it's something that's fairly new to me. I've been teaching myself. I'm into my second year as a teacher, so I haven't perhaps got the scope of experience that some have on this matter. I think having had a little research into it this morning, what is noticeable to me is that it's a crisis that is going to become more and more problematic over time. I understand that teacher rates have dropped fairly steadily in the last few years, but that has been in line with slightly lower levels of children, particularly in secondary schools. However, in the next few years, having looked into this, it does seem that pupil numbers are increasing quite dramatically, and I think the gap is going to broaden then in terms of the staff to pupil ratio, where this is really going to be something that becomes more and more of a problem if it's not addressed and addressed quickly.
I think, drawing my own experiences, the teachers that I've worked alongside through my training year and in the school I'm at now, there are a number of people that have left the profession, citing different reasons for it: work-life balance, a passion for something else, or finding it a real challenge. And I think at times that side of it can be completely neglected. It is a tough job, mm-hmm. and I think it might not necessarily be a job that people have a full understanding of prior to training. And I think the people particularly that dropped out during my training year were quite honest with me and just said, do you know what, it's nothing like I expected. Yeah. Mm. And it is far, far more challenging than the perception they had in their mind initially turned out to be.
Yeah.
And I think that was, certainly with those individuals, a real issue for them.
Yeah, and I mean, some of the talk that we had through on Twitter over the last few days, a couple of people were highlighting that during either their final year placements or their PGC, etc., they had quite a lot of support from their mentors or from other teachers in the school, whereas when they began their NQT year, a lot of that rests on this kind of relationship between the NQT, their NQT mentor, and kind of the structures of the school. And a lot of people were sort of contacting us to say that, in actual fact, they felt a little bit kind of abandoned, or a little bit kind of like a ship pushed out into the night without kind of an experienced sailor on it.
So, isolating, I think. You become someone that's really used to sort of weekly drop-ins, meetings, and all of a sudden you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a class of 30 children, you're very much reliant on support previously, and then all of a sudden if you're not getting that support, that could be really daunting.
I think it's something we'll also touch on later, but expectations in terms of like pupil attainment and progress ramp up significantly when you have a class of your own.
Yeah.
Responsibility. When you're training, and both of us, Sam and myself, trained in the last sort of 3 years, I'd say, maybe 4 years.
Yeah.
When you are there is a strong level of support. You don't have full sort of responsibility and autonomy for the class. You are essentially judged on your ability to deliver a pretty good one-off lesson, and if you don't, there's huge time and support for reflection. When you have your own class, it is altogether different, and then as we'll come into it later, then there's lots of sort of additional judgments and measures that are in place to sort of test progress of teachers, and I think that can weigh very heavily on people.
And I think there is, if you look at the charts steadily, the numbers of people leaving, they aren't huge amounts in their first year, but they steadily increase. And I think there's the enthusiasm and the love of the job that I think in your NQT year a lot of people can still sort of that carries them through, if you like. And there's this idea of, oh well, it's my NQT year. And let's be fair, NQT years are very, very hard, and it is a tough challenge for all the reasons we've just highlighted. So I do wonder that if perhaps the love of the job and the enthusiasm for the job starts to lessen, or I hate to use the phrase, but perhaps the novelty starts to wear off a little bit, so that those pressures and those issues that are affecting you actually over the course of the years start to actually mount up to the point and outweigh it on the scales, if that makes sense.
I think as well as I get your point, and I think as well as it being a sort of additional workload when you're into your second, third year of teaching, I think your general knowledge of the sector, of how schools run,
mm-hmm.
your perhaps colleagues are being a little bit more open with you about difficulties they're facing because you're not a trainee or an NQT. I think your exposure to perhaps the the less glamorous or less enjoyable side of teaching are heightened. And I think it's then key to think, how can that be, you know, how can the system be addressed? How can things change so that those issues don't exist, and that people see things differently, and there's a spin-off in terms of retention?
I think you're right. I think when you're training, and possibly even when you're in QT, you're blind to a lot of things that go on. Mm-hmm. I think you're in your little bubble, and that's necessary, because you have to hone your craft, and you have to become more independent and more resilient in times that can be challenging. But I think as you become more experienced, and by no means are we around this table incredibly experienced, but you do year on year start to see the politics of teaching. Yeah. You start to see the environment you're working in a different light sometimes, and actually those frustrations or those things that you're battling with could mount up to a point where you think, actually, is it worth it?
Yeah, and I think the important thing to remember there is that all schools are different, and this is something that I've spoken to several people about recently, in terms of there's a lot of teachers, I think, that perhaps aren't enjoying or aren't happy in the environment that they're in. Mm-hmm. I mean, we spoke to Emily Weston, and she has sort of sent us a message through saying that she was doubting whether this career was for her because of, and I quote, the toxic environment that she had been working in, the pressure demands on her time, etc. And they didn't have a realistic idea of what well-being was. It was either a case for her whether she chose to leave or she would actually end up being forced out of the school. Yeah. And thankfully for her, she's now moved on, she's got a new job, they're very supportive, she enjoys that environment. And that is a conversation that I'm hearing a lot of, and when I've sort of been contacted by NQTs even that are kind of struggling, it's something that I think we need to remember, that all schools are different. Mm. And the way that people enact policy is different. And I would say that we are moving towards, I hate to use the term, but almost a golden age of education, where we almost have a SLT all over the country that are actually buffeting up against policy from central government and enacting it in a way that they see fit. So something that I do think is really important with retention is reminding everyone that not all schools, well, not only are not all schools the same, but they're all different. And everybody goes about doing the day-to-day in different ways. And for all of these teachers that are feeling that they've got nowhere to turn to and are leaving, there are obviously teachers up and down the country that are feeling incredibly supportive. So is there an obligation, either from central government or from schools that are performing well, to support other schools in ensuring that there isn't this high level of sort of leaving? If you've got a very high staff turnover year after year after year, should something happen to investigate what is the root cause of that? Mm. Because we're losing talented professionals, both young and old, and having already, these people have spent thousands of pounds and many years of their lives to train to get into this position. So should schools be doing more to actually look into this?
I think in terms of who's been looking into it and what's been done, I think without being an expert on this, there have been some government sort of studies and surveys into this, albeit on a very limited scale. I think when you mention, I can totally understand what you mean when you mention, should schools that are performing well almost share ideas with other schools. It's how do we judge whether they are performing well? Are we talking about schools that have a very high staff retention rate? And because there's probably lots of additional factors there that contribute towards them having a high retention rate. There's probably schools, we're from an area in the south of England where it's very congested. There is, there are quite a lot of jobs, but I do know up north or in other areas of the country, there are also, there's also schools or teachers in positions where there aren't schools for miles. So could there be a whole host of teachers at those schools who are unhappy, aren't content with the workload and the expectations, but the schools themselves do have high retention rates because there aren't alternatives?
But
I do not know.
But I think that there's, let's be fair, I mean, if I'm being frank, I think the government aren't actually that interested in teacher retention. They don't like they can pay all this lip service, and they can do all these lovely little pieces of press release
little extra
to send out in the middle of the holidays because we're all really interested in reading them. But let's be frank, if they cared, they would do something about it. It would be so simple for them to send out an end of year survey to every teacher in the country,
100%.
Asking about workload, asking about values, because excuse me, the only time you ever ever get asked about this is when you're Ofsted. Mm. Now, no member of staff, if they were really feeling negative about their school, mm-hmm. there is no logic even to that member of staff on their teacher survey slating the school.
No.
Because all that happens is the Ofsted report then comes back that teachers aren't happy, and if they're not happy, there's a large chance it's down to SLT.
Yep.
SLT know that teachers... I mean, it's
and then Ofsted come and visit again and again.
And it's absolutely farcical. And the simple fact is, let's be honest, they don't care. If they cared, they would be listening to the unions. If they cared, they'd be going into universities and talking to NQTs or recently qualified teachers or teachers on initial teacher students on ITT. Like, let's be honest, I think we need to actually accept that they are not bothered. The latest research that they've done, they interviewed a couple of hundred teachers that have recently left.
Yeah.
Now, they gave the reasons for leaving are the ones that we all know: workload, stress and mental health, the school leadership, bullying from SLT, behaviour of children. But let's be honest, a couple of hundred people, if they were that interested, this would be a crisis. We have more teachers leaving than training. Mm-hmm. So we have more experienced members of staff leaving than training.
I think we're I'm loving Ben's passion here. I really am. This is like sort of Churchillian. I love it. I think we're, the three of us, and a whole host of people that are going to listen to this, are in a position where we value education as extremely important. I think we can see how much impact what teachers do has on the next generation, and then we can contextualise the effect that that will have on the country and the economy. I think politics is a whole different spin-off, isn't it? But I think, are government genuinely interested? Probably not. I imagine that's because in the short term it is further down their list of priorities, which is a great shame. I do think we do need to address this. I think Ben makes a very good point. It'd be very useful to get a wide spanning feedback from teachers. It's whether or not that would then be acted upon, and what would they then do? What would you suggest?
I think for us, we are obviously individuals that love our job, and we are people that are still within teaching. It's not something that we've walked away from for whatever reason. And I think it could be, like you were saying, David, the priorities for the government are lying elsewhere currently. And I think if something was done across a widespread field of people that have left the profession for whatever reason, that could then start to snowball, and we could start to then see a real pattern. But I think 200 people, 300 people is not enough, because that's such a small sample of the teachers. You're saying that in the last however many years, it was 6,500 that have left the profession. 200, 300
in the first 5 years
is a tiny proportion, and that level of data is not representative
of
everybody.
Not.
And I think if we've got individual citing issues that you've already mentioned, workload, etc., that it is a crisis that's not being addressed, and I think it's only going to get worse.
Absolutely. And the fact is that if you look, we talk about it not being a priority. Now, we all know that Brexit is going to rumble on for years and years and years. As awful as it is to say, we know that's there. Like, that is going to happen.
Yep.
Like, whatever the outcome of that is, it's almost kind of a separate issue. The fact is that whatever the country looks like in 10, 15, 20 years, it's the children that we're teaching now that we're giving this country to.
That
this is their future. Now, if the government want to spend, or the DfE want to spend 20 grand or 50 grand on a ridiculous little advert that they can put out and say, oh, we've really thought about, we've listened, it's just hokum, because teachers on the ground are not seeing this. I mean, we've had numerous messages from various different people through Twitter. I mean, lots of ladies have got involved, contacted us to say that when they start hitting their 30s and they're having families, etc., the job is not flexible. So we're in a situation where we have, I'm just reading from one here, one lady that's contacted us to say that she had a young family and teaching just isn't an option. It doesn't offer the flexibility in the working hours to even do the school run. So teachers are almost being crowbarred into paying a high proportion of their salary to a childminder. When I completely understand, I'm not for a minute suggesting that teaching isn't an incredibly important job, that it isn't incredibly important that you're there early to be there for the kids, etc., but more job shares. Now, I'm not a senior leader. I can understand that there are benefits and negatives to a job share, but there has to be a greater amount of flexibility, because the private sector are offering this, and people literally, I mean, we've all three of us have received numerous messages from people that have either left the profession or are considering leaving the profession, and they are literally saying to us that the private sector enables them to look after for their children, mm-hmm. and enables them to go to assemblies, enables them to go to sports days. And yeah. unfortunately, a lot of schools are not offering that to teachers.
I think you're right. I think we are obviously three males, and we're not going to be in a situation where we are having children ourselves, but partners in the future, I'm assuming, will do that. And I think that must be such a draw on your sort of preference of really actually weighing up what's important to you. I think there are so many teachers that I've seen who are mothers who, yes, are probably in the building later in the morning and leave earlier, but you can't really argue with that. They have children that they need to look after. And I think we are obviously all guys right now who, we know it's a tough job because we're working many, many hours in the day and we don't have children. So when that time comes and we're all fathers, again, yeah. where will our sort of, I don't know, our preferences lie in terms of where we give our time?
Yeah, 100%. I am touching on what we've mentioned. I got a message from Jacqueline Harris. She said that after she left teaching only one term after coming back from maternity, she said she was no longer the same person she was doing a full-time job in only 3 days. She gives an interesting perspective of somebody who's working in a small school. She said she could never really spend the time she wanted with her son, and she felt she wasn't doing anything properly. She was a deputy head, she was class teacher, English lead, line manager and trainer for some of the support staff, NQTs and trainees, and she told her head that she wasn't going to be able to manage this, but the head wasn't able to really offer an alternative. So she's left teaching, she's doing some consultancy work, the money's not there, but she feels that the balance has worked there for her. I was going to touch upon this, and what I guess the next question, we're talking about the government, what can the government do? I think if we're being honest, we don't expect any vast changes anytime soon. I think what we can then look at is some of the fantastic leaders that we see that are trying to make and implement some of these changes, and I'm talking about the likes of like Kate Albridge. I've seen doing some great stuff on Twitter. We get some good mentions from loads of other guys on there, and I'm sure you can bring up some names later. But whilst we're seeing some leaders who are implementing things like eliminating written marking, reducing the expectation for planning submission, flexible PPA time, there are some people doing this and having some great results in their schools. But it's a conversation. Are there lots of teachers and head teachers that are implementing these things and not having the same effects, that aren't shouting about it? I don't know.
I think, yeah, excuse me, I think that, I mean, they're all fantastic ideas, or they, what, let's remember, all schools are different. However they want to implement marking, etc., is down to each school, as long as it works for them. I think the point is that it has to be realistic for staff. So we have to have a situation where we need, the whole working 15 hours a day has to end. It's
not a realistic,
because we are seeing a spike in mental health issues and stress related problems amongst teachers. I've got another message from somebody who wishes to remain anonymous, basically saying that due to several bereavements in her family, she took some time away from school. She then ended up leaving on maternity leave, ended up going into another profession. She still views herself as a teacher. She still feels she might go back at one point, but her mental health was suffering to such an extent from the nature of the job. And I think that we're at a crisis point, and it's something that we see across the country. There's an issue with sort of anxiety, depression, etc. But we're at a point that I think a lot of teachers are, I mean, I regularly hear about teachers just standing in their classrooms and crying.
Yeah.
And this is despite the fact that we love this job. And it's interesting. It touches on something that a friend of mine spoke to me about, and she's a physio in the NHS. And she was saying the difference with the public sector is that the government know we will always say yes.
Yeah.
Because the government know that ourselves and nurses and doctors and police officers and firemen, etc., we will always pick up the slack.
Yeah.
Because we're doing it for the people that we're helping. We're not doing it for the money, and we're not doing it for the 6 weeks holiday or other mumbo jumbo like that. We're doing it because of the fact that we care. And government know that. They know that they can push teachers and push teachers and push teachers, because this Thursday morning I'll go back into school and 30 kids will come in and I'm back there, and that's that.
Mm.
The government can sit in their offices and they can sit in these rooms, and even to an extent SLT can sit in offices, because they aren't the front in front of the kids. Right. I'm not for a minute suggesting they don't work exceptionally hard, but it is a different relationship. And I think if you're a nurse stood on a ward, you do just work 20 hours straight if you need to work 20 hours straight, because otherwise those patients don't get fed.
No, you're on the front line, aren't you?
And that's it.
And you're individuals, and you're right, nursing, teaching, we do it because we want to make a difference.
Yeah.
And our commitment, our passion, will at times be taken advantage.
Absolutely.
Because we won't say, actually, no, I'm not going to do that, because then you've got 30 children or you've got patients on a ward who you're letting down. And that really, I personally firmly believe that jobs like ours, there are very few like it where your emotions will be tugged at
as much as ours.
And so many different emotions all in one day. You're right, teachers cry in a classroom. That's horrendous.
And it's regular.
And of course it shouldn't happen, but it does happen. And then you've got to ask why. I think we've spoken about the government, but another thing that could be done, and could be done a lot better, is when you've got teachers that leave your school, obviously SLT or governors are in a position where they might do exit interviews and they might ask some questions about what they liked about the school, why they're leaving, but what happens with that information? Like, we know, we've all got colleagues that are from schools we've worked at who've left, and whether or not they feel that they can be honest in those situations, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm sure if they're citing reasons that I've heard about, things could change.
Yeah.
And I do honestly think that schools and governors really do need to do more, because you've got talented individuals who love the job but are feeling pushed out and feeling the only option for them is to walk away. Yeah. And then also, I thought about sat here this morning, is you've got teachers who've had 30 children for a year, and those 30 children then don't see that adult anymore.
Yeah, they might not
be in their year group, but even in the building, they're not there. And it's like, oh, where's my teacher from last year? And, it's like, and then actually, you know, they're not teaching anymore.
Yeah.
What would that child think
if you said, oh, actually, they're not doing their job anymore? And they might think, oh, maybe it was us last year. Maybe we had really hard work. Like, that's horrible for the children. Mm-hmm. And it's that consistency of an adult is so important for children.
I think building on what Sam said, a regular theme for or amongst people that are either disillusioned with teaching or have left teaching is a want or a desire to feel trusted, and a desire to feel that they are allowed and given the freedom to do what they think is going to help their class and their children learn and thrive as well as they can.
Yeah.
Now, I think there is perhaps a responsibility on teachers to challenge leadership. Mm-hmm. That might not be comfortable, but I think there is a responsibility to challenge leadership, to question certain things that you are perhaps asked to do that you think is adding little or no value to the children. We touch upon the balance or the spin-off between marking and planning. Are teachers spending a lot of time marking or doing conforming to marking policies which aren't, in their opinion, adding any value to the children, at the expense of planning lessons that they feel are going to add the value to the children? Are teachers sitting in staff meetings that they think don't need to happen or could be done through an email, when they could at that time be planning for their class, or indeed going home and enjoying something that a bit of time with their other half, going on a run, doing something for their well-being? Are teachers spending weekends typing up written plans that they think are going to add absolutely no value whatsoever to their class?
I mean, I left the UK, teaching in the UK for 2 years, and one of the reasons for that was because, this would have been my second year of teaching, so we're going back to 2013 here, and I was doing full-scale APP sheets. Now, you guys are fortunate enough that you never had to do that.
But
you're in a situation, at that time, I was having to do an APP sheet for every single child. So these, in all sincerity, these sheets would take tens of hours, and it was sitting at a desk with every single child's APP sheet for reading, for writing, for the various areas of maths, not just one for maths. And it was a situation where every single child's had to be highlighted. It then was extended to I had to highlight the evidence in the book, and I had to date where it could be found. It was utterly, utterly pointless. In the latter stages of the year, they started to see
sense.
In theory, that's for Ofsted and check where I'm placing these children in their attainment. I guess it was for the school's own hierarchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It started to dilute slightly that in the latter stages of the year, they decided, well, you can group all your children on ability.
Yeah.
Take the middle child and do the APP sheets.
Group on ability is a whole other topic, isn't it?
I sat there and thought, do you know, I don't I don't see the worth in it. I can't address this with my leadership because they were completely not interested in listening to what I had to say. So I left. And I not only left that school, I left the country.
Mm. Yeah.
And fine. I came back 2 years later and it is a different beast now. I do think teachers are starting to be more vocal, but it's not so much the likes of us that I worry about.
No.
It's the teachers that are locked in those small schools with a small number of staff, where perhaps the staff have been there 20, 30, 40 years, the head teacher's been the same for half a century, and they don't want to adapt.
I guess Twitter as well gives a little bit of context, doesn't it? We're sort of, we speak to people who are in different schools, we speak to people who have similar and different problems. It gives a little bit of perspective that might not otherwise be given. Another thing, touching on what Ben was just saying in terms of, you know, I was thinking, why are we doing things? It often has me thinking in schools, do teachers do a lot because there's a perception that this is what parents expect or this is what parents want, and they might not actually, the parents may not care about that in the slightest. So I'm thinking about certain report formats which take teachers a huge amount of time and effort. I'm talking about marking, home learning, just little things that I think there might be a perception of schools. I think schools sometimes worry about what parents want and expect at the expense of what teachers are realistically able to do, which might help the children, the parents' own children, thrive in a far greater way.
I think there's also a number of things that schools hear and see that other schools are doing, and then you assume that's got to be done because they do it, so we should do it.
And they're actually outstanding.
And exactly, and you're making comparisons against two schools that are not comparable.
No.
And we're jumping through hoops or ticking boxes for the sake of it. But you're right, for me, the biggest thing that I love doing is planning lessons I know are going to inspire my children.
100%.
And doing things like you're saying, like the report formats or data collection, or whatever it might be, that takes us away from really child impact.
I mean, there's often a 2 week period, isn't there, like each term, when you've got your assessment week and then you spend a whole following week
marking
it, putting it in loads of grids, when you already know where the children are at, just to create like a fancy grid for a meeting.
So there's evidence.
I mean,
I must say, I am in favour I support termly testing.
I quite enjoy it.
I think that, but what I would say is that in general, and this is sort of, I think, from various conversations with people at different schools, is that it's easy to forget that we then have to do the planning and the marking and all the normal data.
It's a balance, isn't it? When you've got, yeah, exactly. So I think the tests themselves have value,
absolutely.
How do you balance
it? I mean, I think what we're saying is, like, I mean, we're talking a lot about what schools are doing. So, I mean, is there an onus, do we think, on initial teacher training providers or mentors, teacher mentors, etc., that perhaps we should be preparing teachers or students better for when they first enter schools? I mean, we're talking a lot about schools to blame, but there's lots of very good schools where teachers still leave.
So, sorry to jump in. I am just using myself as an example. So I trained to teach 2 years ago. I'm in my second year of teaching. I based my move into teaching on a week of work experience at a prep school. I'd done a bit of coaching of kids with sport. It looked very like Hogwarts, actually. Brentwood Prep School.
Shout out to Brentwood Prep School.
But I thought that was great, you know. I wandered around a few classrooms, took a team to a football match. It was so much fun. And then I applied, got on the teacher training route, and I thought that was, you know, jolly good. When you actually get into the training and when you then see the realities of the job, it is far greater than you have a clue. You know, it's just far greater than you think at all beforehand. And then what seems to be more apparent is, as a reaction to these, and look, I love it, I've adapted well, and for me, I think it's a great move, but I've got mates that...
He says himself.
No, but what I mean is, I've got mates who had similar things and dropped out of the training course. You know, they their eyes are open and it just wasn't for them. But what is becoming almost a reaction to this dropout rate is to make access routes into the teacher training courses easier. I know that the professional skills test, the expectations for that has changed. Yeah. I think when we did, or when I did it, I think if you failed it three times, you couldn't apply for 2 years to teach.
That's true.
We also paid for it. Mm-hmm. I had a mate who applied recently. They don't pay for it until you've, you know, after three fails or something like that, and you can take it unlimited time. So the routes in are getting easier. I think I read something this morning, which was
lowering expectations.
So yeah, exactly. I read something this morning, and it was very much along those lines. And then what are we doing? We're getting more people into teacher training. Yes, we might actually get some really gifted teachers out of that who otherwise might have missed the boat academically, but we're also getting a lot of people that think, oh, it's pretty tricky to get a job in the UK employment market at the minute. I'll give teaching a go. Oh, I can get into that. And then, surprise, surprise, these people, when they actually realise what it entails, it might not be for them. Hence, the spin-off and the spiralling, like, dropout rates is a vicious circle.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think certainly when I did my and Dade and I did the same training year, just a year apart, with the same provider, and I think I had over 100 individuals who've all got a degree in something else, but were doing their sort of additional QTS year where we were learning on the job in a school, and the numbers started to dwindle, but sort of pre-Christmas. Then stay pretty solid at the end of the year. And then I think for these ITT providers, that their percentage of how many have got a job straight out of training is what matters to them. So if they get 90, 95%, that looks outstanding. And obviously then they get more and more every year. But actually, do they check up a year later or 2 years later, how many of those individuals went through that system are still there? Because certainly there are aspects of the job that I find a challenge that we spent 3 hours learning about in our entire training year. You think about assessment, you think about SEND training, anything.
It's part of that because schools do it so differently.
Every school.
And that's and I think we still, I mean, I'm touching on what David was just saying. I think we're almost our own worst enemy in the fact, like, if you look at someone like Teach First, like, I know there was a whole load of controversy, 6 weeks ago now, when they released this advert, basically highlighting the fact that this young woman, I believe, she'd done great on her Teach First course and taught for a couple of years, and now look at what she's doing. Yeah. She's off running a computer software business or something like that.
It's not highlighting longevity.
And literally, I mean, I know that they came out and apologised. They only came out and apologised because they've been caught out in what we all know that
berated.
Because people said it was outrageous.
Like, we're seeing through it. Like, I know, if they're getting teachers into the classroom, then great. But to highlight the fact in an advert that in actual fact, one of their big important things that they're selling to people is you can do that and then move on to doing all of this real stuff.
Yeah,
and
it's true.
It's almost like that idea that we've talked about before, that if you move from year one to year two, it's a promotion. And the fallacy of this idea that if you can start off with teaching, but you're not going to be there forever, because no one wants to be there forever. And I mean, I'm just reading some tweets that are coming in as we're recording, and Jay Summerfield is saying that the entire culture needs changing, that teachers are sometimes their own worst enemy. And I do think sometimes the way that some people talk about it, because also there's... I speak to a lot of NQTs, and at the start of the year, you always see it on Twitter, that you see a lot of NQTs saying, stop telling me how awful teaching is. And there is a culture, I did it. I remember standing at a photocopier in my first year, standing at a photocopier, and a member of staff who I looked up to, she was 6 or 7 years older than me, I think she was maths lead, and she literally, first day of term, said to me, oh, there's only 86 more days to go. And I genuinely believe, if you are sat there counting down how many more, I mean, we all do it, we might say it as banter when there's a week to go, and you say, oh, four more get-ups. But if you're sat in the middle of October, and you're counting down the days to Christmas, and you're stood in front of staff that have recently qualified saying, oh god, what a waste of time this is. Like, that culture can permeate, and I remember thinking, blimey, if you hate it so much, then why are you here? Because we want enthusiastic teachers. And I just think that there is a culture sometimes that we don't support. We do talk about the negative, and it can frighten people off. It can drag you down. And I would say that my current head teacher is good at saying to us, you are amazing. Like, there is absolutely a need for that sometimes, to actually say to a collective, to a staff, and that includes the TAs, the office people, like people take the praise.
I think just building on Ben's point, I actually, it would have been around Easter time, I was fairly new to Twitter, I put a similar tweet out along the lines of what Ben's saying. I think it was something along the lines of, if you are an experienced teacher, I think you should do everything you can to celebrate this position, this industry, this profession, and really highlight the good points to new teachers because they're in a very vulnerable position, blah, blah, blah. And I do get where Ben's coming from. However, as things have developed, I do think it's really important that we look at those experienced teachers and we think, if they are feeling like that, why are they feeling like that? And we've had quite a few tweets this morning from experienced teachers, people who are in a position either where they are they're experienced, have a family and are struggling with that work-life balance, or they're experienced and they've reached a certain point on the pay scale where they don't want to become a senior leader but they're a little bit stuck, or that their school are making budget cuts and they feel that they're coming under increased pressure because their salary is quite weighty. So I think there's a lot of ways we can sort of look at this and think, yes, the culture is perhaps sometimes damaging. Why is it damaging? I think it does need to come from the top down, but I think it's important not to overlook that there's probably head teachers, SLT, who themselves are very unhappy. Why are they unhappy? What can be done to facilitate them? I don't know. Another point I've been thinking about is we are seeing a recent trend in sort of government suggesting that the curriculum is perhaps a little bit narrow, something that is no great surprise to any of us. Mm-hmm. I think we know there's a very heavy focus on English and maths, and I think trying to fit everything in the school day is extremely tight. I think the massive focus on English and maths is probably the overriding factor on, you know, teacher sort of unhappiness, I guess. We're talking about data attainment progress in those subject areas.
And perhaps, I mean, I know this is something that we will be having a guest on later in the year to discuss.
Yes.
But the use of specialists to teach certain subjects. I mean, like there are plenty of people out there, teachers out there, that aren't teaching the subjects that they fell in love with at school themselves, because it's viewed actually we'll get PPA to cover that. And I think, I mean, I'm just reading here, we've had a head teacher, Chris Henderson, contact us to actually say one of his concerns as a head teacher is the calibre of people coming into the school. So he says, I've had NQTs leave after their NQT year, not because they've been pressurised by SLT, but because they just couldn't maintain the pace and demand of the job. I really don't think that this should be underestimated. It can be emotionally draining and bloody hard work, but we need to realise that this for some people this just isn't for them.
No.
So perhaps I do think when we're talking about, you said earlier, David, about that we're perhaps making it easier for people to enter the profession, perhaps we're almost being our own, or the ITT providers are almost being our worst enemy. That although, I mean, they're just desperate to get people into schools, to get teachers in schools, perhaps there's an element of it'd be better to have less but more quality. I don't really know how...
From a head teacher, like, obviously I'm not a head teacher, but I'm guessing if you were in the position of a head teacher, you've got a student teacher who can be at your school for, I think it's about £16,000 a year on a salaried, or free if you're in an unsalaried like teacher training post. You are someone that's in the building who can cover lessons free of charge. You're someone who will at the end of the year probably be looking for a job, and you can get them straight away on an NQT salary. It's easy, it's a quick fix, and sometimes you'll get some really good candidates, but there will be other times, I'm sure, where as a head teacher it's probably quite easy to get a trainee in, give them a go, and then at the end of the year when people are leaving, it's like, oh crap, we need teachers. Oh, I've got this trainee here. Are they great? Would we keep them? Well, you know, you're left with
especially if you advertise for the job and there's no one that applies.
That panic, that desperation.
Yeah. I think
especially, I mean, we're talking massively about primary because we're all primary, but looking at the research, there are a huge number of people teaching secondary subjects that aren't qualified in their secondary school. They don't have a degree in that subject.
Did you watch School, the documentary recently? They had a PE teacher teaching maths, A-level.
The only subjects that were filled with specialists were history and PE.
Yeah.
Now, I get two subjects that are massively driven by passion, not to say that other subjects aren't, but they're the only two subjects last year that the government hit their targets on. So every other subject is being taught by someone that potentially has no university education.
It's a money thing, in secondary school as well, isn't it? You've got like maths and sciences, a huge shortage. And as a country, we know that like those STEM industries are massively lacking in personnel. So I guess if you do have that degree qualification, you're weighing up, maybe I would love to teach and pass that on to the next generation, but then my salary could be significantly more working in like a private sector.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think for me, when I was, so going back 4 or 5 years ago, when I was thinking of becoming a teacher, my initial plan was always to be a secondary school PE teacher.
I thought it was an astronaut.
My passion in life has always been sport, despite these two trying to pick up. And I always thought that was the avenue I'd go down. But actually, looking into it, I applied for PGCE for PE, and I wasn't accepted because I didn't have enough experience in schools. Actually, as well, that particular training path, if I went down it, I would have had to pay all the student fees myself.
Yeah.
Whereas had I been, and it wasn't for me, but had I been interested in physics or maths, there was bursars and grants. It was too much. But there's £25,000.
Yeah,
and obviously the government are trying
to throw
money in areas. And
it's very reactive, isn't it, all the time, rather
than proactive. We've got a gap. We have to fill it, throw money at it.
What are the constraints on that? And I don't have the information to hand. But there must be a proportion of our trainees at the moment that are thinking, right, well, how long do I have to work before I can get my £25,000 bonus? Mm.
Yeah.
And then how quickly can I leave afterwards?
Of course.
Yeah. I'll be frank, I don't entirely blame people for that.
No.
Like, if you're sitting there and you're thinking, well, actually, I do enjoy maths, or I happen to be bilingual by birth, for example, so it's no kind of particular hard work for them. Mm-hmm. For some people, actually, yeah, I could go into that, do a few years, and that's a mortgage for a house.
Yeah,
no, I agree.
I've got a friend who at university studied biology, and massively at school, that was his passion. He was trying to look for jobs when he finished his degree, and actually there was nothing available.
Yeah.
So an option for him was, well, actually, if I did teach training for a year, what could I end up doing? I could work. We've always mentioned in previous pods, it's a career, there's pensions, etc. There's benefits.
For me, job stability is such a draw to teaching.
He's 24 years old.
Yeah.
He did 2 years, and he's already walked away from it because this is secondary, but he couldn't cope with the behaviour of the children. And actually now he's doing something he loves completely away from teaching, and he's happier than there's ever been. Mm-hmm. And that shouldn't be the case. If we're trying to draw people in, you shouldn't have people walking away so young.
Yeah.
At
the very start.
I think touching on what Ben said as well about how you know, you can't blame these people. You can see their point of view. I think, as again, it's important to say we're three guys in their sort of late 20s, early 20s, Sam. We don't have families. We don't have children. So we can sit here and say, you know, like, we can talk about the making the difference. We've got these children that we're desperate to come back to school with and help them thrive and learn. I do understand that there must be people who have children of their own who want to see them flourish and want to be able to dedicate their time to them. And I guess their perspective on this would be slightly different. That's why it's been really useful to gain such a broad perspective on Twitter and elsewhere.
Homework. Made for teachers, by teachers.
Okay, well, thank you so much for listening. We do understand this is a very emotive subject. We would love you to carry on the debate when we post this in the next few days or so. Please do continue to contact us with any kind of thoughts, suggestions, recommendations of any podcast that perhaps you'd like us to cover. If you fancy a trip down to sunny, leafy Crawley, do let us know. We would love to have you on. Thanks ever so much for your time.
Cheers, guys. Have a good new year.
For much more content exclusively for teachers by teachers, visit homeworkmagazine.co.uk. Also, please follow us on social media at homework_magazine and at homework_podcast. Homework Podcast is brought to you by Iguanas Producciones.